Welcome to Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. It's great to have your company. Many, if not all, of the features we do on medical research are dependent on clinical trials. Testing the effectiveness of therapies is the way new drugs go to market and how new treatments are approved for patients. But there are increasing concerns among researchers and patient advocates that the number of people enrolling in clinical trials in this country is not as high as it needs to be. The question is why, and it turns out that not a great deal of research has been done into public attitudes towards clinical trials. Researcher Catherine Flynn set out to change that. Flynn is an assistant professor in the Department of Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin and an investigator at MCW's Center for Patient Care and Outcomes Research. She talked with Lake Effect's Mitch Teich about her study, which appears in the latest edition of the journal Clinical Trials.
Clinical trials are an extremely important part of clinical research. They provide critical evidence about which strategies and therapies are most effective to diagnose and treat patients.
Well, and so at the beginning of the day, is there an issue right now in medicine that there are not enough people enrolling in clinical trials?
Yeah, actually, enrollment is one of the issues that we face. It can be difficult to get enough patients into a trial. And when we don't get enough patients into a trial, then a lot of money is wasted trying to get that trial set up. And then we don't find out the answer that we need because we don't have enough patients.
So are there trials that never get off the ground just because they don't enroll enough people?
Yes, I would say there are trials that we don't end up finding the answer to the question that we were asking and trying to answer with that trial.
So what do we know about the challenges in finding the right people to enroll?
Some of the challenges relate to having a diversity of patients. So, for example, a lot of clinical trials are moving outside the U.S. for various reasons. And that's a problem because, you know, the drugs or devices or other products that we're trying to test and make sure that they're safe, we want to make sure that those things work in a U.S. population. And so we need to have clinical research being done in the U.S. in order to be sure that these things will work for Americans.
So there is something distinct about a U.S. population. While people are all people, there is something distinct about the people in the United States that makes it important to do this work here?
Absolutely. What's especially important about that question is that we don't always know what those things are that make people in different places different or similar to each other. So there are some obvious things that you might think of. And if we know that there's something that makes someone different, we can do what we call control for that in a statistical model. But there are all sorts of things that we don't know. And so we want to.
But it's important to be able to – essentially, it's important to be able to figure out, you know, before you can control for something, you have to find out what the data is to begin with.
Absolutely.
And there have obviously been some well-publicized issues in the past surrounding medical research undertaken without consent.
Absolutely. There is an unfortunate legacy of people not being told what the research well, not being told that they were participating in research. And yes, that is a problem in the history of research. And it's a reason some people feel uncomfortable participating in research. However, now there are lots of safeguards in place, and when those things are followed, which we hope that they are, and I think they typically are, they do protect humans who are participating in research.
Well, and so if there are already issues surrounding getting people enrolled in clinical trials, how did you reach out and find people to even ask their attitudes towards clinical trials?
So in a way, this was easier because, you know, we can advertise a study and it doesn't require you to have a certain condition and it doesn't require you to, say, take a drug that you don't know what might happen to you. All it required you to do was to come to a meeting place and meet with about 6 to 10 other people and talk for an hour. So we didn't have any problems enrolling for this particular study.
In a sense, this was a clinical trial about clinical trials.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so what were the sorts of questions you asked them?
So these were focus groups that we conducted with community participants Some of them were people who had already participated in clinical trials, and some of them, about half of them, were people who hadn't previously participated in a trial. And so we held these groups, and we started with defining some common terms. So we were going to be talking about clinical trials, and we needed to make sure that everyone was sort of on the same page with what these different terms meant. And so we had a little basically a brief educational session where we asked people what different terms meant, what is clinical research, what are clinical trials, and talked about the answer and made sure everyone understood. And then we gave some additional information about what happens during the course of a trial where we're gathering information from people and we're starting to have a better idea of the safety of the product. You know, as people participate in trials, they're also sort of living their lives and things can happen to them. They could experience what's called an adverse event. Where it's just some side effect or something that happens and they can report that. The problem during the course of the trial is that we don't necessarily know whether that thing that happened to them is related to the drug or not because in a well-designed trial, there is what's called blinding where you don't know whether you're receiving a placebo or the drug. And so, you know, your doctor also doesn't know. And so if you have a headache or you have a heart attack, it's not obvious whether that's because you have, you know, you're predisposed to have a heart attack or because it was a side effect of the drug. And so there is a lot of regulation in place for what happens when those things occur.
Well, and so what was the message that you heard from these people?
So it was interesting. We heard, first of all, people had a pretty good understanding of the basics of clinical research, even people who had never participated in it before. But they really didn't understand these safeguards that are in place. And so when we talked about things like an institutional review board or an ethics committee, we talked about the federal government things that are in place to protect people. And when we talked about these things, people were comforted, actually. They were glad to know that these things were there and that there were people, you know, looking into the conduct of trials and making sure that people were protected.
Well, and obviously it's difficult to extrapolate these results and say it applies to everybody across all populations and all demographic groups. But was there a breakdown in attitudes based on demographic factors? I mean, were some people more likely to enroll or participate in clinical trials, or did you ask things in that way?
So this was exploratory research, and we conducted four groups. And we had separated those groups based on whether or not people had previous experience in a clinical trial. And we also separated the groups based on race. We ended up with two groups with white participants and two groups with African-American participants. And we did it that way because of this legacy that we mentioned of
Tuskegee.
Exactly. Research in the U.S. without people's consent. And there is a often African Americans will have less trust in the healthcare system and especially in research. And so we wanted people to really feel comfortable in these groups talking about, you know, any concerns they might have. However, because we only did one group of each type, we really are limited in what we're able to say that there were differences or not. I will say that, you know, in general, the themes that came out of each of these groups were the same, whether people had been in trials or not and whether they were African American or white. So there wasn't really any sort of differences that we feel comfortable being able to say there were.
So what are the implications then for these results? So, you know, are there imperatives for medical researchers and institutions going forward?
Absolutely. You know, there is, of course, a lot of clinical research done and not necessarily a lot of research into what people understand and what they expect. And, you know, we undertook this research because of a patient advocate who is part of this group that was conducting this research, who said, you know, we're trying to improve the quality and efficiency of trials. We're trying to improve how safety is reported. But, what do patients think? What do people who are actually going to participate in these trials think? And we said, well, that's a really good question. Let's go ask them. And, you know, I think having patient advocates involved in the design of trials is really important because they bring a different perspective that isn't always well represented with the other scientists and statisticians and people who are involved in making trials. I would say that one of the other important things that we found is, you know, when we asked people about different details related to safety reporting, and we looked at the informed consent documents that people sign in order to participate in a trial, it seems that there are some places in the consent document that are perhaps vague, and that patients themselves might interpret differently than the researchers who have written these documents. So, for example, saying that something related to safety will be reported as quickly as possible, that means something different to a researcher compared to a patient who might have experienced an adverse event.
In the age of genome sequencing, is this an especially pivotal time for this area? I wonder if, you know, the pace of medical research is accelerating, or maybe I'm attaching too much significance to where we are right now. But I mean, I wonder if, you know, we're at a point where there are more clinical trials than ever.
Yeah, that's a really great point. You know, I think people recognize the value of clinical trials for answering important questions, and the trials are getting bigger and bigger. And this is something that the way that we conduct trials needs to change to reflect that. So, you know, when the regulations were put into place for how to conduct trials and how to monitor safety over the course of the trial, there were many more single site studies where, you know, you're conducting a study at one place. And the reality of modern clinical research is that these studies are being conducted at multiple sites all over the world. You can have mega trials with as many as 1,000 sites all over the world. And so obviously the way that we communicate with each other and regulate these trials to make sure that people are being treated the same in each of those different sites, it's essential that the entire enterprise moves along with the times.
How does this work fit in with your own area of expertise?
So my main research interests are related to patient quality of life, so how we measure quality of life in a trial, how we analyze that. I'm also interested in patient decision making. And so this sort of fits into that and thinking about, you know, patients' involvement and understanding of research.
There's a little psychology in this?
A little bit, yes, although I don't have any training in psychology. My background is in sociology and health services research, which is the study of the healthcare system.
But obviously, when you talk about decision making, this falls really closely into line with that particular area.
Absolutely.
Catherine Flynn, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Catherine Flynn is an assistant professor in the Department of Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin and an investigator in MCW's Center for Patient Care and Outcomes Research. She spoke with Mitch Teich. There is a link to her study from wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Coming up next, how one woman's cells changed the course of medicine, but the way it was accomplished may be one reason people are suspicious of clinical trials. We'll talk with the award-winning author of The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks when Lake Effect returns on WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio.